ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद्भागवतम 7th canto Chapter 13, The Behavior of a Perfect Person, Text 31.
Ajatmika jibir jukar
Ajatmika jibir jukar
Abhimuktasya kahachit
Abhimuktasya kahachit
Marchyasya Krishrapanatai
Matyasya Krishrapanatai
Artai Kamai Kriyatakim
Artai Kamai Kriyatakim
Ajatmika Dibir Dukkai
Ajatmika Dibir Dukkai
Abhimuktasya Karhichit
Abhimuktasya Karhichit
Matyasya Krishrapanatai
Matyasya Krishrapanatai
Artai kamai kriyatakim
Artai kamai kriyatakim
Ajatmika jibir jukkai
Ajatmika jibir jukkai
Abhimuktasya kahichit
Abhimuktasya kahichit
Marchyasya krishrapanatai
Marchyasya krishrapanatai
Artai kamai kriyatakim
Artai kamai kriyatakim
Ajatmika adibi
Ajatmika adibi
Ajatmika adidaivika and adibodhika
Ajatmika adidaivika and
adibodhika Dukai by the threefold miseries of material life Abhimuktasya
Abhimuktasya
of one who is not freed from such miserable conditions or one who is subjected to birth, death, old age, and disease. Karhichit
sometimes.
Martyasya
Martyasya
of the living entities subjected to death. Krishrap Upanatai,
Upanatai,
things obtained because of severe miseries.
Artai,
even if some benefit is derived,
Kamai,
which can fulfill one's material desires,
Kriyata,
what do they do?
Kim,
and what is the value of such happiness? Translation. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions. Adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibodhika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. Purport. According to the materialistic way of life, if a poor man, after laboring very, very hard, gets some material profit at the end of his life, he is considered a success, even though he again dies while suffering the threefold miseries, ajatmika, adidaivika, and adibodhika. No one can escape the threefold miseries of materialistic life, namely, miseries pertaining to the body and mind, miseries pertaining to the difficulties imposed by society, community, nation, and other living entities, and miseries inflicted upon us by natural disturbances, from earthquakes, famines, droughts, floods, epidemics, and so on. If one works very hard, suffering the threefold miseries, and then is successful in getting some small benefit, what is the value of this benefit? Besides that, Even if a Garmi is successful in accumulating some material wealth, he still cannot enjoy it, for he must die in bereavement. I have seen a dying man begging a medical attendant to increase his life by 4 years so that he could complete his material plans. Of course, the medical man was unsuccessful in expanding the life of the man, who therefore died in great bereavement. Everyone must die in this way, and after one's mental condition is taken into account by the laws of material nature, he is given another chance to fulfill his desires in a different body. Material plans for material happiness have no value, but under the spell of illusory energy, we consider them extremely valuable. There were many politicians, social reformers, and philosophers who died very miserably without deriving any practical value from their material plans. Therefore, a sane and sensible man never desires to work hard under the conditions of the threefold miseries, only to die in disappointment. Om Ajnana Chimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshumari Tanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Vivekananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Now, we're continuing with our discussion of the Python Man and what he's saying to Srila Prahlad Maharaj. These instructions are very potent for freeing you from the trap of material illusion. So many of you are in your 20s, and almost all of you, few notable exceptions, you have good health for the moment. So how much of your vision of your life is bound up simply with the particular bodily state that you're in right now, the particular bodily phase? How much of your plans, your thinking, your ideology, your theology, simply a product of the particular phase of bodily development that you have? I'm sure so many of you recognize your teenage years now for what they were. I think we only have one teenager here, right? So that all of you have passed through your teenage years, or Stephanie, are you 19 or 20? Okay, one teenager, two teenagers. How old are you? 12. That's not a teenager, though, is it? All right, only one teenager. So, you can see when you pass out of your teenage years and you're in your 20s, that your teenage years were basically dictated to you by your body, by your hormones, and by the mind which identified with the body in that particular phase. That was teenage life. Of course, when you were a teenager, you thought that the adults didn't understand. You thought that you were going through something unique. But then when you get into your 20s, you realize, I was just caught up with my body and the changing hormones and experimenting with my body, and experimenting with my mind with different forms of drugs and intoxication. Then when you get into your 20s, you think you're mature. Another big mistake. You didn't know anything as a teenager, and you don't know anything in your 20s. In your 20s, unless your life has been a total disaster, you get more confidence. Well, I'm not a teenager anymore. I'm in my 20s. I've got some experience. I've done some traveling, had a few partners. I know the ropes of the world, so to speak. I know the scene. I know the system. I'm not a newbie anymore. You know, I have sufficiently initiated myself into the sins of Kali Yuga. I know how to discriminate between juicy sins and not so juicy sins. Juicy sense objects and not so juicy sense objects. I'm in my 20s. I'm on top of it all now. Of course, when you're in your 20s, you're not yet aware, in most countries that are developed, the so-called free market democracies. In those kind of countries, when you're in your 20s, generally the fact that you're going to have to pay a heavy price for all your experiences, it really hasn't dawned upon you. You may travel around the world, just like we have travelers here. You may go to the university, you may have this job and then that job, but it hasn't really hit you yet that you're going to pay a heavy price for your sense indulgence. What's that heavy price? Your whole life you're going to slave. That really hasn't hit you yet. By the time you're in your 30s, that hits you. You realize, I'm paying a huge price for my sense gratification. But you can't do anything about it. You may know it, but you can't change the situation because you're too attached. You don't want to give up your sense gratification, even though you're working like a dog to maintain it. And even though you're working like a dog to maintain your sense gratification, you're filled with so much anxiety. And therefore you can't wait for the weekend when you can get some relief, you hope. So much of what we think is just based on the particular phase of the body we have. Young girls are optimistic when they're in their 20s. Generally, they're optimistic. And they're hoping and looking someone who will settle down with me after playing around a bit.
Yeah.
After trying this one, trying that one. Hopefully, there'll be someone who'll be the Mr. Ideal. He'll settle down with me and he'll want to have children. The lady said like that. One was telling me yesterday, I have the mother within me, and that mother within me has to come out. Of course, the guy will nod his head, whatever. But it hasn't dawned on the guy that in order for the girl to have the mother within come without, the guy is going to have to work very hard. That truth hasn't hit him yet. You have to pay a price. Of course, in countries where there's welfare, social welfare, then the guys can shirk that responsibility. They can duck that responsibility. The government will take care of you. We shouldn't marry because you'll get more money if you're on the benefit and you're not married. All these kinds of things. So everyone's caught up with their body. Men in their 20s, they want sense gratification without responsibility. So they're very happy to live with a woman and indulge. And the men in their 20s expect that this will just go on and on and on. And that's the way life's going to be. As I've explained several times, these men in their 20s don't know that the invoice is going to come in the post any day. You've got to pay for all that. You're caught up in material nature, which means you're caught up in a cycle of ever-increasing demands, which can never feel fulfilled. That is the nature of material existence. Your desires are never fulfilled, but you have these desires. It's very cruel, isn't it? To have desires which will not be fulfilled. And you don't lose those desires at the time of death. You take birth again and chase the same illusion. Chase the same desires which can't be fulfilled. It's a very torturesome thing to have desires which can't be fulfilled. To understand this lesson about material nature takes knowledge and discipline. And of course, who wants discipline these days? And who cares for knowledge? Who wants to take the trouble to discipline their mind and senses? Doesn't sound like much fun, does it? If I went to your college or high school and announced, all students who want to learn how to discipline their mind and senses, come here. How many would show up? Everyone would laugh. Well, that sounds horrible. Discipline your mind and senses. There's no fun in that. But there cannot be even the beginning of peace in your life unless you undergo a program, undergo training for disciplining your mind and senses. Well, let us reflect on how so much of our current plans and consciousness are tied up simply with a particular phase of bodily growth that we're in, or bodily decline. By immersing your intelligence in Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll be saved from that fate of having your intelligence shackled to your body. And so you think like the phase of the body that you're in. By immersing your intelligence in Bhagavatam, you'll be spared from that agony, that illusion. Now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is reformulating our vision of life. Purport after purport, Srila Prabhupada works hard to change our vision. What is our faulty vision? We evaluate life in a crazy way. That I'll work hard, I'll get some money, and then if I have a nice house, a nice car, and I can take some nice vacations overseas, then my life is successful. This is what everyone thinks. And in New Zealand, of course, it's not simply if you can have a nice house, a nice car, and take a few trips overseas. If you really want to go to the higher levels of the materialistic cult, then get a boat. This is a big boating country. So if you've got a boat, that shows you've really made it. Why? Because in order to pull the boat on the trailer, you need a powerful car. So it's not simply a boat that you need a powerful car too. And then you need somewhere to keep the boat. And then, when you have such a powerful car, generally it's a four-wheel drive, sport SUVs, sport utility vehicle. You just don't want to leave that on the street. You need a proper garage, and so on and on it goes. So the boat is the ultimate symbol in New Zealand that you're well established. Those who have boats, they've made it. I think I've told you before, you might have forgotten this some years ago, how one Christmas day I was at Picton, on the tip of the South Island where the ferry comes from Wellington, it goes to Picton. So I was there. And besides being a ferry dock, it's also where people have their boats. And they have their boats, and they also can drive with their boats to Picton. And at the dock, there's jetties, is that what you call them? And they can release their boat into the water. So I was chanting my japa that we had gotten in about 2 in the morning on the late night ferry, because it was much cheaper. And I was chanting, and it was around 7 or 8 o'clock Christmas morning. Or it was the day after Christmas, something like that. Anyway, all the families were driving into the Marlborough Straits for their Christmas, their holiday vacation. So again and again, car after car, I saw the same ritual. You know, a powerful engine car like a Ford Falcon or a Toyota SUV with a big boat behind it, and father's driving the car very proudly. Just see, I have achieved it. We're on vacation now. The wife is sitting in the front seat next to him, and she's all excited and giddy, and the kids are all laughing, and the father's looking very successful. He's actually a beast of burden, but he hasn't figured that out. He's a mule, but he's deriving great satisfaction. I'm taking my family. We have our boat. Of course, the sad fact is that the majority of such families will not stay together. That is the horrible fact. But while they're together, they're trying to enjoy in this way, and the man gets the sense of pride. So car after car, I can see the man in his big Falcon, Ford Falcon, or big Toyota SUV, or Mitsubishi SUV, and the same look on their face, you know. I'm a big man in a big, powerful car with a big boat beside me. I've got my kids in the back seat. My wife's next to me. I'm in control. Meanwhile, you can just look in the car and see it's the wife who's ordering everything.
That's what he's doing.
Yes, dear, yes. Reminded me of course, Krishna consciousness is a different situation, but still, because we have these bodies that are in the material world, there can seem to be some parallels. One of my godbrothers, he jokingly told me, he's a married man, he's been married for 30 years, so he told me, you know, he's in kind of, how do you say, mock pride, you know, Maharaj, in my marriage, I always get the last word. I said, oh, really? What's that? Yes, dear. Well, anyway, they have a nice Krishna conscious marriage. But what I was seeing on this Christmas day at Picton, of course, had nothing to do with Krishna consciousness in terms of the lifestyle of the people. I saw the man being so proud, the lady just controlling everything, and the children were just uncontrolled sense gratifiers. But the father liked that, you know, that his children had uncontrolled senses. He felt proud. You know, don't worry, kids, I'll buy you anything you want today. Yeah, but the man was getting pride from that. I'm feeding my expansions. I'm giving them toys, whatever they want. So each car I saw with the boat behind it, it would go through the same puja. It would drive up to the jetty, and then, you know, you back the boat down the jetty into the water. It's a sacred ritual, I could see. They were just like, it was like serving the deity. The whole family would do it together. The father would be in a little anxiety. It's an expensive boat. You got to get it into the water down the jetty just right. The mother would be, you know, concerned about her kids. The father would be directing her, do like this, do like that. Meanwhile, the mother's attention would be elsewhere. What are the kids doing? And the father's in anxiety about the boat and the kids and the wife, whether she knows what she's doing. The whole thing was a ritual of enormous religious proportions. Car after car, I watched this. The same thing. This is the Janmashtami of the year. Of course, this is really something that New Zealanders can understand, but I think the foreigners, you can also pick up on it, but New Zealanders know that, you know, boating is a sacred sacrament. That's one of the nine processes of devotional service. And if you or if your family has a boat, you know, then the whole launching of the boat onto the waters to begin the holiday season, this is the peak of life.
So car after car is still the same thing. You know, you wade into the water, you know, up to your knees, and the kids are screaming with delight. And the father is feeling quite proud. Some anxiety, but he's proud. I'm launching my boat. Soon we'll enjoy. And then they get the boat into the water, and all the kids jump on, and the wife jumps on. Yippee! And the man's driving, you know. Yeah, he's, once again, he's really proud. Oh, this is it. I've really made it. So much hard work to get to that status. Just for a brief time. First of all, the fact is the majority of those families will not stay together. That is the tragedy. One devotee in Melbourne, Sankirtan went through it, he was telling me that he was in the city in Melbourne when they're having the, what do you call it, graduation from college, capping. They're having the capping. And yeah, it was a big hall, thousands of students. I guess maybe several schools were capping at the same time. Or, so he was watching. At the end of the ceremony, they all filed out of the hall. You know, thousands of kids. And he said most of them, it was very rare to see a kid leave with both parents. Most of the kids who were capping were there with just one parent. And, of course, statistics bear that out. So, first of all, the family's not going to last. Secondly, your life is not going to last. Now, when you come to Krishna consciousness, traditionally, every new devotee learns about the threefold miseries. We all have learned that, the threefold miseries. Who here doesn't know about the threefold miseries? Leon, you know about the threefold miseries? You've heard it, though, right? Anyone here not heard of the threefold miseries? It's basic Krishna conscious knowledge that material life is irrevocably bound up with three types of miseries pertaining, first of all, to your body and mind. Secondly, pertaining to other living entities, what they do to you. Not only other human beings, but insects, any kind of creatures. And then thirdly, what the demigods do to you, Adidaivika, through the form of natural catastrophes, famines, tsunamis, earthquakes, epidemics, like that. So, what you should understand is that the Paipa man, he's telling you here, materialistic activities are always mixed with these threefold miseries. Always. In other words, as soon as you perform a materialistic activity, you should know what you're getting. Mixed up with that activity are the threefold miseries. Otherwise, what people think is that I did a material activity, and then, somehow out of the blue, miseries came. It never dawns on the people that the miseries, the threefold miseries, are bound up with that material activity. It's all in the same package. But, of course, Maya doesn't let you see that. You think you're just merrily progressing with your life. You think you're just expressing yourself, finding your path, finding your way. But every time you bite into the apple, you're also biting into the threefold miseries. Now, if you can start to think like that, you'll save yourself a lot of trouble. Every time you bite into the apple of material life, you're biting into those threefold miseries. Not that you bite into the apple and then later, from somewhere else, oh gosh, miseries came to me. No. The threefold miseries are part and parcel of material activities. Now, if you can train your intelligence to think like this, you'll save yourself so much trouble. Because most people think that misery is not connected or it's not bound up with the material activity. But the Python man is teaching you very revolutionary knowledge. Now, Prahlad Maharaj earlier in the seventh canto says something along the same lines.
So material activities, Prahlad explains, begin in the plan-making stage. There's thinking, feeling, and willing. Where does the misery start? It starts even in the plan-making stage. Before you even execute, the misery's already begun. Now, you need some purification to see that. Just by plan-making, just by making plans for materialistic activities, you start to suffer already, even in the plan-making stage. What to speak of the execution stage? In order to understand this point, you have to know how materialistic plan-making troubles the mind. It fills the mind with anxiety and false expectation. That is suffering. But at least you should be able to see the outcome, as the Python man's explaining. If you're not advanced enough to see what Prahlad Maharaj said, that you can mark where the distress begins, right in the plan-making stage, at least you should see what the Python man is saying, that materialistic activities are always mixed with the threefold miseries. It's not that there's materialistic activities and then there's the threefold miseries. No, they're packed together. Just knowing that very strongly with your intelligence will check you from making a fool of yourself in material nature. You can always just tell yourself, why should I do this activity? It's mixed with miseries. Now, of course, if you don't want to act in a way that brings about misery, what do you do? Devotional service is your only option. Still, you have the choice, and you can choose whether to go on like a fool or choose to engage in devotional service. That choice is always yours. The Python man's making the point, even if you are so-called successful by worldly standards, so what? Think about that. Even if some of you, if you went on with your material life, if our photographer friend from Berlin, if he became a world famous photographer, so what? What's the big reality of life? Suffering the threefold miseries. Why? Because you're a living entity who's subjected to death. And even before you die, you're suffering in so many ways from your own body and mind. I wonder if you ever think how your own body and mind persecute you. You ever wondered about that? Your own body and mind persecutes you with contaminated desires. You may not even want it, but still the persecution is there. You have to know how to deal with it. That's a necessary part of Krishna conscious advancement. So, your own body and mind are going to bring you misery. Other living entities are going to bring you misery. Just like last night, I started, I was itch on first one leg and then another leg. Then there was an itch on my hand, and I realized, I looked around, yes, indeed, there was some small sandfly buzzing around. So, at least for me, when a sandfly bites you, it stings quite a bit for the first 10 minutes, and then it goes away. Is the same with you too? No. Yes. You're used to it. So, this is a misery from another creature. It's not only that other human beings can cause you misery. There's so many non-human species that bring suffering to you. And then, there's miseries brought about by nature, ultimately controlled by the demigods, of course. Famines, epidemics, tsunamis, earthquakes. Why does New Zealand look so beautiful in terms of landscape and scenery? Because of disasters. Earthquakes. Of course, no one thinks about that so much. The same earthquakes that form such wonderful scenery, they can also cause great havoc. In fact, who are the people who were living here when those earthquakes that formed New Zealand as it is now? Where are those people? You don't think about them and how they might have suffered. You just think, oh, now everything looks so beautiful. This is the way of being illusioned by material nature. People are illusioned by their own bodies, especially young girls. Young ladies, young men have great faith in their body. It's going to bring them good things. You can practice. You can look in the mirror at your body and say, "You're going to bring me good things, aren't you?" Good on you. Try it. See the illusion that swallowed you up. You have hope based on the body. Now, the Python Man is telling you it's not worth it. It's not success. In this way, the Bhagavatam is reshaping your vision of how to have a successful life. Because all of you are burdened by social expectations. If you don't have family expectations because you have come from a broken home or parents who didn't care, still there are social expectations, ingrained social expectations, that you should make it, you should be something, you should achieve. But what is the value of that achievement, that success? It doesn't stop your suffering. In fact, it increases your suffering. What is real success? What is real achievement? When you make progress towards stopping misery. Who is teaching that science of how to stop misery? All you're offered is are temporary solutions which actually make the situation worse. What's wrong with dedicating your life to stopping misery? Stopping misery means stopping the cycle of repeated birth and death. What's wrong with doing that? Isn't that obviously the highest career? The highest engineering and technology? How not to act so that you always get the threefold miseries, which are bound up with every material activity. In this way, our whole vision of our life changes. Yes, you should succeed. We want every one of you to be a success. We want every one of you to succeed with your life. But what is that success? That you have to ask yourself. Try to understand how much you've been conditioned by social expectations. That you should make something of your life in terms of material advancement, material achievement. Did you know that the way society works is such that you are never allowed to feel satisfied with what you have? You always have to have something newer and better and more. That is how consumer societies function. You should always be in a state of dissatisfaction with what you have. And therefore, you'll always strive for more and more. You should never be simple and content. You should always want more. And you should always become dissatisfied with what you have. In this way, no one has the proper state of mind for advancing in spiritual life. To advance in spiritual life, you should know what is simplicity and peacefulness. But people today don't have that opportunity. They're induced, they're manipulated to be always dissatisfied with the status quo. You just can't sit tight and keep your life at the same simple level year after year. It has to be expansion. You must become dissatisfied with what you have. Got an old car, old clothes, last year's designer fashions. Old gadgets, old electronic gadgets, an old house. You've got to push ahead. Society is inducing you more, more, more. You can't just stay put with your material life. So all that pressure affects our devotees and it destroys their simple living. You've got to show that you've got what it takes to get ahead. There's got to be some expansion. Get a bigger this, get a newer that. That's what life's about. This is the pressure that's on you. Now,
In Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, we take that same desire for achieving and expanding, and we put it into spiritual life. That is the real solution. That in this short life, I'm going to make a solution to the problems of the threefold miseries. That is how you really measure success. So we have to change our vision. How our life is going to be prosperous. How our life is going to be successful. The Bhagavatam is providing you with a completely different standard. Because after all, your whole material life is at the mercy of disease, old age, and death, which will surely come. And even while you're so-called young and healthy, all your material activities are mixed with the threefold miseries. This is a bad deal. An intelligent person wants no part of it. Therefore, what is wrong with dedicating your life for real success? What's wrong with just keeping your material achievements at a minimum and then using your main energies in life for spiritual success? What's wrong with that? Living simply does not mean being poverty stricken. Living simply means that you're not caught up in the perpetual dissatisfaction of a consumer society. Having a comfortable level of existence for an intelligent person means the level of existence that I can live on without compromising my spiritual life. That's comfortable. You want to analyze what's a comfortable lifestyle. You don't go and see how expensive someone's furniture is, how big their house is, do they have a boat? No, you look and see. Whatever you have you attained that without sacrificing your spiritual development? Then that's a comfortable lifestyle. A completely different way of looking at things. Those of you who are living in ashrams have a wonderful chance to get a taste for simplicity. How you can be so happy having very little. This is a great asset in life. After some years living in an ashram situation, you'll understand, how much do I need to live and be happy? I don't need that much at all. This is a great lesson. So even most of you, you'll go on to marry, and eventually you'll have your own abode. You'll hopefully not be deluded to think that I need so much in order to be comfortable. I need so much in order to be happy. You'll realize material expansion is not going to satisfy you. The spiritual expansion must go on. Without Krishna, the house is just a shell. When there's Krishna, the center of the home, then the home can become the spiritual world. So we're changing completely the way people measure success. Generally, as I said, people like to say that, oh, you got a good job, your business is doing nicely, you own a few houses, you own some property, you've done well in life. We are not fooled like that. We don't consider that success. Because as the Python Man says, even if one achieves such success, what's the benefit of it? It doesn't stop the threefold miseries. Therefore, we don't call it success. In fact, it's a disaster because by investing your time in that so-called success, you lose out on the opportunities of being spiritually enterprising, making the spiritual solution to the perpetual problems of material existence. So please think deeply about how the Bhagavatam is changing your vision, changing your concepts of what is success. I know some of you have parents who are on your case. What are you going to do to be a success?
What are you going to do to achieve? What are you getting? What are you acquiring? This is actually cruelty. The laws of nature will not allow you to achieve anything materially without a heavy price. Paying a heavy price for these threefold miseries. It's cruelty also because such persons don't see the wealth of Krishna conscious development as real success. How a devotee can be satisfied in the most simple conditions. This is a great art to acquire. Let's once again remember what the Python Man is saying. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions. Adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what's the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. Now, what is getting you in trouble in life? You see, you do have a pleasure potency because you are part of Krishna. Krishna has a pleasure potency. It's unlimited. The Lord has three energies, material, spiritual, and marginal. The spiritual energy, the internal potency, has three divisions, Pladiti, Samvit, Sundini. By these three divisions of the Lord's internal potency, he acts in his capacity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna never goes outside of himself to enjoy. He's never incomplete. Whereas whenever you try to enjoy, you go outside of yourself. As you saw in the pictures there, they had to do something to be happy. Just like man and woman. The man looks to the woman to bring to his life something he's missing. He wants the female charms, the soft body. He wants the temporary words of appreciation. And the woman looks to the man for what she doesn't have. So in this way, because both are feeling incomplete, they go outside of themselves to rely on someone else. Krishna never does that. He is perfect and complete in his pleasure seeking. Because we are part of Krishna, we also have that pleasure potency in us. And we seek to activate it in the material world. We seek to act on our pleasure potency by coming in contact with matter. And this is the insanity. Krishna never makes such a mistake. Therefore, it's a great offense to think that when the Lord appears in this material world, he is enjoying matter. But think about it. You indeed do have a pleasure-seeking capacity because you're part of Krishna. But you're exercising that pleasure capacity in the wrong way, in the wrong place. Redirect that pleasure potency towards devotional service. And then you'll understand what pleasure really is. In Krishna consciousness, we do not hide from the fact that people are pleasure-seeking. We are fully aware of that point. The problem is they're looking for pleasure in the wrong place. Because you're part of Krishna, you have that propensity for pleasure. Krishna's pleasure is unlimited, impeccable, utterly perfect. When you talk about Radha Krishna, you're talking about the exchange of love, the exchange of pleasure. The Lord expands his pleasure potency. Actually, in that sense, everything is Krishna. But for the sake of enjoyment, for the sake of pleasure, Krishna expands his pleasure potency. Therefore, you have Radha and Krishna. You can't understand that divine pleasure potency of the Lord unless you become appropriately purified. Therefore, we were singing last night, Goranga Bolite Have Pula Kasharya, Hari Hari Bolite Naine Bhakti. When will I reach that state of purity in which I can cry out the name of Lord Chaitanya, Goranga, and shiver with ecstasy? When will that day come? Arkabe Nitai Chandya Karuna Hoibe Samsara Vashnamora Kabe Tuchave. When will I get the mercy of Lord Nityananda and my material desires become insignificant? In other words, if you really want pleasure, you must become qualified. The tragedy of those young people we were seeing in the slides is that they have no qualification to be happy. Therefore, they have to rely upon cigarettes, alcohol, drugs, and each other's bodies, each other's unwashed bodies. If you truly want pleasure, then you must attain the proper qualification. When you're fully qualified, you won't even want your own pleasure. You'll just want Krishna's pleasure. When you feel that way, when you feel the bhakti bhava, when you feel yourself to be a servant of Krishna, then you are successful. So please trace this pleasure potency you have in you to its source. You have it because Krishna has it. But you're making a big mistake. You're trying to gratify your pleasure potency with matter. Krishna never makes that mistake, even when he comes to the material world. Krishna's affairs with his consorts have nothing to do with the exhibition of the pleasure potency through matter. That's why Krishna's pastimes are difficult to understand if you have materialistic vision. So we should feel embarrassed that we've tried to execute our pleasure potency activities within the material world. Just like I know some of you are feeling embarrassed looking at those slides of young people. You could see yourself in their shoes. The expectations, the desire for relief, the desire to be accepted, the desire to be desired, the desire to capture a quarry. It is extraordinarily embarrassing to try to fulfill your pleasure capacity within the realm of Maya. But Krishna is always fulfilling his pleasure capacity and never with matter. Well, that is the lesson we can learn from Krishna Leela. Krishna is always acting with his pleasure potency and never the slightest problem. And what happens when we try to act with our pleasure potency? Every material activity we do is already prepackaged with the threefold miseries. Knowing that, how could you dare do something? If you know that as soon as you take a step towards someone, they're going to punch you in the face, would you go on taking a step toward that person? Of course not. Similarly, as soon as you do a material activity, you must get the threefold miseries because they're prepackaged into material activities. Truly understanding this, how can you perform material activities? But as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you must act. Nahi kaschit chanamapi jatuk tishtat chakarmakrit. Everyone must act. You can't stop even for a moment. The modes of nature are pushing you to act. Therefore, the most important success to achieve in life is how to act free from reactions. How to act with your pleasure potency in the perfect way. That is bhakti yoga, the activities of the spirit soul in perfection. So any questions? So now you saw what Lord Chaitanya saved you from? That could have been you? Yeah.
I'm wondering why that any friend of yours is not punishment to act in a certain way, sometimes acting in the way that you mentioned would maybe act like a person.
You want to be accepted. You want to be popular. Right? So therefore you do all sorts of crazy things. The pressure is so great. You don't want to be left out. You'll feel that pressure in any kind of material association. It's not just that the teenage association has its pressures. Adult life also has its pressures. Then you'll want to be respectable. You want to be known as having achieved something. When you go to the family reunions, you want to be able to say that my salary increased this year, or I got a better car, or my children are doing this or that. Always the pressure is there. Therefore, you have to choose your association very carefully. It's, as you're rightfully understanding, this kind of pressure is practically impossible to resist, isn't it? Look how intoxicated they are. And what is it? The face of them not seeing their suffering. You see what they're holding in their hand? Holding a glass of beer or a joint or a cigarette means I don't want to see my suffering.
But even just like regular people, not so much of intoxication.
When you engage in any kind of sinful activity, you become blinded. Take illicit sex, for example. It causes such deep bodily identification. How can you want to hear that you're not the body when you're engaged in that? You by engaging in that activity, you've committed yourself to just chaining yourself to the bodily conception of life. This is it. We are the body. How can you see reality then? Therefore, if you want to begin to get your life together, break the four pillars of sinful activity: intoxication, illicit sex, eating, and gambling. That doesn't make you spiritual. It just makes you a human being. So, as I've always explained before, you don't have human beings today. This Krishna consciousness is doing a miracle. It's making people into human beings and transcendentals at the same time. Never been done before. Yes.
As a devotee, pursue and maintain a working life while not getting caught up and the threefold material miseries.
Well, we have examples of that. If Matt works, Jeff works, Krishna Gatala works. So you ask them, they're doing it quite nicely. They're not working to increase their share of the material world. They're working to maintain themselves and to have a Krishna conscious home. Also, they're working to help the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes Krishna Katha comes traveling with me. He buys my airplane ticket and takes care of me very nicely during his vacations from work. So everything should be Krishna centered. Big man, he also helps by traveling. He has a Krishna conscious wife, so they have a Krishna conscious home with Krishna in the center. But he's not thinking, I'm going to get ahead of everyone. I'm going to be a big man in the eyes of the world. The more money I have, the more I'll be able to enjoy. The more money I have, the more Bridget will appreciate me.
think like that. There's a big difference. From the external point of view, he's working, millions of other people are working, billions of people are working, but his consciousness is different. He's executing his Grihastha Dharma as a married man. He's supporting a Krishna conscious home. He's contributing to the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Jeff also does like that. His big contributions for spreading the Krishna consciousness. The job is not their life. The job supports their life. Big difference. They don't let the job rule them. You don't have to experience something for you to understand how miserable they are. Understanding is not based on your having done what the people are doing. Understanding is, and compassion is based on knowledge. I've never stuck my hand in the fire purposely, but I can appreciate how someone would suffer if they did. And I would stop them if I saw them trying to do it. Experience is not the way to develop compassion. You see things through the eyes of the Shastra. See through Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. That's the best way to see, not by experience. If you haven't experienced such things, you're very fortunate. Generally, it means some favor coming from a previous life. But what do you do with your good fortune? Sometimes persons who haven't experienced those things in a young age, they think they've missed something. So by the time they realize that they're different from everyone else, then they really work hard to become as degraded or even more degraded than everyone else. So it's not experience, it's knowledge. If you really care to help these people, then understand through knowledge how they're suffering.
You're talking about material achievement in Spain that it's not succeed. Whereas when you make the progress in spiritual life, spiritual darkness, that's the definition of your Krishna consciousness. Because from what ourselves can't see, development is, our success is somewhat intangible. So how do we rectify the mentality to feel like we're actually achieving something or going somewhere in comparison to where we were before we met the devotees?
You can analyze your situation through knowledge. You study the Bhagavatam, it'll teach you how to see yourself according to the correct standard. Bhakti Prashan Bhavo Bharatya Anya Chacha. By engaging in devotional service, you feel three things: pleasure, nourishment, and relief from material pangs. Just like when you eat. With each bite, you feel pleasure, you feel like you're being nourished, and you feel relief from hunger pangs. Similarly, by engaging in devotional service, because it's the pleasure potency of the Lord, you feel pleasure, you feel nourished, strengthened spiritually by doing bhakti yoga, and you feel relief from material suffering, so that anyone can experience. And then, everyone needs a spiritual guide, so you can check with your spiritual guide, how am I progressing? After all, you sing every morning, Yasya Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada. So if that's so, if the Guru is pleased, Krishna is pleased, and vice versa, if that is so, then, or the converse also, then you actually ask, how am I doing? How can I improve? If you're a sports person on a team, don't you ask the coach, how can I improve? You ever played sports? What did you play? Hockey. So, do you just get on the field with your stick and do whatever you want, or you ask the coach, how can I be a better player? Right. So, it's a big deal. Of course, you might say, well, I scored a lot of goals, therefore I can tell, I know myself that I'm doing good. But sometimes you can score a lot of goals and the coach will tell you, but, you know, this is not a one-person team. You've got to work with the whole team. It's going to be a real victory. You might have had a brief flash in one match, but what about the whole schedule of matches? Well, that's what the coach tells you. You have to practice more teamwork. In any case, we all need a coach. Yes.
What does it actually mean to be free from the threefold misery?
You don't act in a way that brings the threefold miseries. You don't perform material activities. Of course, the body that you have is a reaction to material activities, but you don't consider yourself the body. You let the body play itself out, so to speak. This body is composed of good and bad karma, but the body just lets it play out. You don't accumulate any more for yourself. You had a question?
I wanted to ask if you could clarify one thing that you told me, much whether it's an instruction just for a specific point of time or broad one, but that's a few people have been given them a case about batting it and not offering to call back. Considering it is
not. It's not necessary. It's just one of those things that's accumulated year after year. Every year, a new thing comes in. You know, if you were around when Prabhupada was physically present, you'll see he kept everything very simple. Knowing that as soon as you open the door to this and that, every year it just increases. One devotee, what happens is, there's a term for that kind of phenomenon. What is it? One person does something, and then
one person says something that changes a little bit.
So that's what happens. Somewhere, someone started doing that. You're offering, to Prabhupada. Someone started doing that, so then a lot of people started doing it. It's not a Krishna conscious standard, it's folklore. Every year something new comes in, and it spreads like wildfire. Not that there's anything wrong with it, per se, but it's just added in out of nowhere. I'm not going to condemn anyone who goes and takes the key lamp to Prabhupada's mercy, but it's just something that came out of nowhere. Yeah, it started about started in the 90s. So many things like that. Some of them I do, just not to make a big deal out of it, some of them I don't do. I know what the standard is, but I also know human nature. That's the tendency of human beings to just always want to add more and more things so things get cluttered up. Prabhupada was the master of the focus. How to get you from point A to point B. How to get you back to Godhead in the shortest amount of time, the least amount of effort. He didn't get involved in all this esoteria and all the miscellaneous things. That wasn't his program at all. His program was the fast lane back to Godhead. The straightest possible line from point A to point B without getting everybody overdosed with all sorts of, you know, religious trappings and cultural phenomena. So you go to some temples, they do that. They bring the ghee lamp to Prabhupada. Some don't. If I'm at a temple where they do that, I don't say anything. It's just something that came in a few years ago. It increased the Prabhupada consciousness. You want to increase the Prabhupada consciousness, follow his instructions. It's a nice sentiment. Therefore, I don't object. But if I see you doing it here, I'll just tell you it's not necessary. Come with a long list of these kind of things. It's not offensive. It's just not necessary. Anything else? The short one?
No, for the short one.
Okay.
In terms of spreading Krishna consciousness and book distribution, that sort of area, what is a good way to give association and not take association in a way that maintains your integrity but also enlightens and hopefully maybe plants a seed in the process of those who you're associated with?
Well, you must become purified. Then you won't be bewildered by the people you meet. Otherwise, just like those guys that you saw, you might think, hey, having a good time. What about me? You have to become purified so that you don't become contaminated.
Is it like a discretionary thing?
You have to make some spiritual advancement. It's not a mental adjustment. You actually have to make some spiritual advancement.